I'm Samantha.
And I'm Christian.
And this is Going There. Hello. I just feel like we have to say we have our friend Sarah here with us. Yeah. Hello, Sarah. Welcome
Hello,
to Going
Sarah
There.
Bragg. Welcome Hi. To Going There.
Yes. Sorry. I should say your last name too. Yes, Sarah Bragg. But we were just telling her, listeners know if you listened last week, that we've only been doing this new intro a few times. And so we just kind of awkwardly had to practice that in front of Sarah. So,
hey, it's good.
Yeah, yeah, we're getting the hang of it.
It's the feeling of going there.
Yeah, live audience to practice.
That's what it is, more organically us, because we are just like kind of goofy and awkward. Yeah. And here we are. So we're like, welcome to us.
Welcome, welcome.
You know, but thank you, Sarah, for coming on. How are you today?
I'm so good. I'm just happy to hang out with you guys in your fun studio. I was just telling you guys how it's just, I'm so happy. I love the colors and everything you're doing.
I was saying you're in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and now I hear a little bit more of your accent coming out there.
Yes, I know. I used to live in Atlanta for like my majority of adult life, and we've only been back here for like 3 years, and I feel like it's already like turning up that East Tennessee accent.
That's funny. I'm from Arkansas. My parents both have really thick accents. And when I'm around, like when Christian sees me around my parents or my husband, the two of them will be like, oh my gosh, like I'll say a word that comes out real twangy. And it's like, oh, that's coming out. That's coming out.
Same. My husband gives me grief too.
Yeah. Our family's running joke is like all of my dad's family's in Tennessee and my mom. So we go there quite a lot. And the moment we pass like the Tennessee border, my dad like becomes a different person. We're like, what just happened to you?
You're faking this.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
And he's just like, I mean, the first gas station we walk into, he like talks totally different. It's hilarious.
That's so funny. But it's just in his blood.
Yeah. He's like, I'm just home. I'm like, okay, there you go. So, okay. But anyways, we obviously have an interview on today and we're excited for you guys to hear from Sarah Moore. But Sarah, why don't you just start off there for us? Tell a little bit more about you, your life, work, hobbies, family, all the things.
Gosh, all the things. I feel like that sums up what I do. Like even in my work, I do all the things. Like I have like three different jobs, you know, to make one job. I think that's very normal now that everyone works that way. But I am a podcaster. My podcast is called Surviving Sarah. And I'm really just trying to survive myself most days. So that's why it's titled that. And then I'm a writer and author. Have a couple of books out. And then I was just telling you guys offline, like I just started helping my family run their wedding venue business. So I'm helping with that. And that is fun. And when I don't know something, I'm like, forgive me. I'm actually just a writer. I'm trying to learn business. Yeah. I don't know that yet. But I've been married to Scott for almost 19 years. And then we have two girls. We're in the throes of teenage life. So my youngest is wrapping up eighth grade right now. And my oldest is wrapping up 10th grade. So
she's
about to get her license in a month. So life is going to really change in that.
Are you nervous about that? Or are you excited? Because I feel like my mom, I'm the oldest of four. And I remember she said there were different emotions for all four of us. But how are you feeling about that?
I'm feeling a very mixed bag of emotions. Like on one hand, I'm very excited because she has quite the social life. And I'm like, if I can stop shuttling one, that's going to save time and energy. But the other hand, I'm just like, are you okay? Can you do this?
Yeah.
My most common thing to her, which I guess is not bad, but I'm like, when we're driving together, I'm like, you're going to have to speed up. Like you can't pull out into this lane like grandma. You've got to like go. So she's very cautious. So I'm happy about that. But at the same time, I'm just like, oh,
it is hard to learn that balance. Like I remember I have this distinct memory that when I learned how to drive and I remembered going 40 miles an hour for the first time. And my parents were on this road and my mom kept saying, like, you need to speed up. You need to speed up. And like, you're taught to be so cautious and so safe. So you feel like going fast is like unsafe. And I remember then she was like, no, you are like going to get hit. Like someone's going to come up behind you. It was kind of on this like curve up road. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's 40. I was like, okay. I remember it so clearly that I was like so nervous. Because it's just like not intuitive.
Yeah.
You've never done it before. So
I know. I just need her to get some, like, I think she's going to leaps and bounds when she's in the car by herself.
Yes.
I think
that's where the real learning comes because
honestly, anytime someone is watching you do things, like, it's not a good feeling. So you're just like,
Or even like, I remember the little things about I got my license. I'm like, oh, I want to go through like whatever drive-through it was at the time. And I remember being like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to go through a drive-through. Like, how do you pull in? Am I going to hit the curb? Like,
oh
all
my
those
gosh,
little
it feels
things.
So tight. You're like, how?
It's so true. I made her go through, we were together and this was just like last week and we were going to go to Starbucks and it didn't dawn on her until we were pulling in. She's like, wait, you mean I have to go through the drive-thru? I'm like, yeah, like we're not gonna go inside. Like,
yes.
Her hands were clammy. She was sweating. And I was like, I just hadn't thought about that
in a long time. Yeah. Yeah. And you like want to pull up to the window the appropriate distance. Like, it's all the things that you just get confident in over the years and you don't think about.
Like, she was like getting tickled with herself and like going, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can tell him my order.
That's hilarious.
Awesome. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. You're giving me hope for teenage girls just because it's like I have a 6-year-old daughter right now and Christian has a 4-year-old daughter, and both of them are a little like, ooh, just the way that they can already kind of like snap back with words. I look at my husband all the time and I'm like, I get this panic of like, we got to control this now because when she's 16, like, what's it going to be like? And half the time she's so cute because I'll be like, you have to quit talking back to mommy and daddy. And she's like, she doesn't even understand what talking back is. Like, she just thinks she's like coming with a good rebuttal. And I'm like, I see that you
and
think
half
that.
The time they're honestly pretty good.
Yeah. You're like, that was like, I see what you're saying, but it's still disrespectful. Like, it's just so many things to figure out with a little girl like that. But
it's amazing. That's awesome. Well, obviously you are very busy and I'm impressed with you because you have such like a creative mind of your like brain. Mm-hmm. And then you also have such like a business side too. So that's like a very impressive. You're a podcaster, writer,
well,
all the things. But you have just released your, what number book is this?
This is technically my third book. Okay. Yeah. My first book, I felt it came out when I was 25. I'm 45 now.
It's amazing.
So I'm like, I was a baby in my mind, looking back how much I've like grown and lived in the last 20 years. But yeah, so technically it's my third.
Well, yeah. Well, congrats. Because when I first heard about you and even your podcast, Surviving Sarah, I was intrigued because I was like, okay, this woman is like very introspective. She knows a lot about herself and she's obviously willing to go there. And I want her on here because your new title of your new book is Everyone Happier Than Me, An Honest Guide to the Questions That Keep You Up at Night.
It's and such a good title.
Yes, it's so good. And
Thank you.
Everyone, just even from the title, we can all relate to that. But talk to us, how did this book come to fruition? Just kind of like zoom out for a little bit. What was the vision for this book?
So I signed a 2-book deal back at the start of 2020 before the world just went haywire. And so I had pitched a second book. And so while I was writing, the first book was called A Mother's Guide to Raising Herself, What Parenting Taught Me About Life, Faith, and Myself. And so I was writing that one and I always had in the back of my mind book 2. And then when it came down to it, we got down to 2021, the end of 21, and it was time to start thinking about book 2. And the publisher was like, yeah, I don't think we want you to write that book anymore. And I was like, wait, what? Like, it just sort of threw me for a loop because I had been like thinking and planning. And it was honestly just sort of indicative of that time of life for me as well. Like, we had all gone through the pandemic. And in the middle of that, I wrote a book. I launched a book. We moved states. My girls started new schools during middle school years. There was a lot of just change and rejection in some ways of things. And my life just felt upended. And so then to also be told, okay, but we're not going to write that one, but just come up with another idea. And I'm like,
yeah,
oh,
like
that
it's
just
that
is easy.
Yeah.
Right. And so I really honestly was like, I'm going to need a minute.
Yeah.
And so I just sort of took the next year because I was in such a hard place. I was just feeling not like myself. I was experiencing a lot of grief just from leaving and things changing. I think many of us have gone through seasons like that. And not to mention just aging. I was hitting like 42 years old and my body was changing. Everything was just different than it had been. But during that time, I was really searching and really, obviously I was motivated because I wanted to feel better, but I was also motivated because I got to write a book. Like, what am I going to say? And so that's really where everything started. This book started coming out. I probably resonate very well with you guys because I don't know any other way but to go there. Mm-hmm. And so I told my therapist what I was writing and she's like, how are you feeling about it? I was like, I don't know. Like, and she's like, well, tell me again. I told her, she's like, oh. Well, that's very vulnerable. No wonder you're saying, wonder you're feeling really unsettled, because I wanted to show up in a really honest way with what I think a lot of us are feeling. And we're a little bit nervous to say that we're feeling this way. And so this book is really kind of all these chapters that I was feeling all these things during that time period. And through different other seasons of life, I could look back and go, oh, yeah, I remember going through that at this time. And how did I get through it then? And how am I getting through it now? And so every chapter is a different question that I found myself asking. And each question was really tied to different feelings that I was feeling. And so it's just, it's really kind of digging in to those questions that we find ourselves asking. And then my honest take of what helped me, and it's not a conclusive thing where it's like, this is the three steps to get to happiness or to get to where you want to be, but it's more of, hey, this worked for me. Mm-hmm. And maybe it'll work for you if you try some of these things, or here's some questions and ideas to help you figure out that path for yourself.
Mm. Oh, so many good things.
Yes. I was going to say, I loved it because even in, I've not been able to read the whole thing, but even just like briefly looking it over, I thought it was so good because I think your book offers the step of just kind of the cliche of like vulnerability breeds vulnerability. And I think you are saying, hey, take this book and use it as your first step to saying, I'm willing to say the hard thing. Mm-hmm. And so you can then also go out and talk to your people about the hard thing too.
Yeah.
It's hitting me at like a very personal point because I'm coming out of a maternity leave of my third child. And even I just recently kind of went through a season of just really having to say the hard thing to close community and my spouse and just really having to sit and like, okay, God, like, this is where you have me. And I feel like a mess. And I feel really kind of just like in turmoil about all this stuff. And actually, I think you're just calling me to sit in it. And it doesn't feel fun. And I want to fix it. And I want to change it. And I want to go do all the things. But the real like healing began when I was able to just say the vulnerable thing. Yeah. And I think from your
Absolutely.
Book, yeah, you're just like, hey, I'm going to actually throw all this stuff out here because I'm probably not the only one that's thinking about and worried and anxious about all these things.
And the sentiment of like your subtitle, the questions that keep you up at night, I think it's so good. We've actually said on different podcast episodes, like as a prompt, like, well, what is that one thing that like when you lay your head on the pillow pops into your mind? Because when you're sharing your story and when you were just mentioning like there's different seasons that I probably felt like this again, it's like when you're in that time of like, okay, I can't even really put my finger on what it is, but I know I feel off. I don't feel myself or whatever. You kind of can blur that throughout your day. You said you guys were moving and just like all the busyness of life can just like mask it a bit, but it's like you get into bed, you like take that deep breath. I mean, you're a mom, where moms have young kids. It's like by the time I get up at 5:30, it's like I don't take that deep breath until I'm like in my bed at 10 o'clock. And you take that deep breath and then these thoughts come into your brain. And so talk more about that idea of like when you just don't feel like yourself, or like you kind of talk about in your book, being afraid to show up for the current authentic version of yourself. What does that mean? And will you share more about it?
Yeah, I can look back at different seasons, and that early motherhood, like you're just talking about, was certainly one of them that I felt like really threw me for a loop. I think change has a way of ushering us into some of these seasons where you don't feel like yourself, where you go, oh, I was this person and now this. I most certainly was that way when I had my first daughter. I was 30 when she was born. And so I had spent all of my 20s so driven, doing all this thing, like, I moved to California and then I moved to Atlanta and I was just doing thing.
Yeah.
Yes. Like accomplishing so much. And I remember by the time I had her and it just changed everything. And I thought, did I peak at 30? Like, was that it? Like my tenure was done, because it just turned everything upside down. And all the things that once pushed me or drove me, that had sort of shifted. I now had different priorities even. Like I was going, well, now I obviously have different responsibilities. I got to like make sure this girl stays alive. Like, how do we do this? I can even think back to like graduating college. I think that was one of the earliest significant ones that stick in my mind of graduating college. You'd done this thing for 4 years and then you go, oh, this is actually not the job I want to do. Now what?
Yeah.
Right. You know, there's so many moments that happen in life where you get there and you think, this isn't really what I thought it was going to be. Now what? And so you're standing there and you're not really sure who you are. It's very much like my middle school daughter. I had those same conversations over the last couple of years. Like, who am I? Why am I here? What am I doing? Does anybody like me? And I'm like, girl, I'm asking the same questions. Like,
yeah, never changes.
Right. We always come back to middle school. And so, and I think in those times, we have a tendency to want to self-protect because we feel very vulnerable. And when you feel vulnerable, you feel that I'm going to be rejected. No one's going to like me. What if I show up as I am? And people are like, no, thank you. Goodbye. And for some of us, we may have had that experience happen in childhood and that comes into our adult life. But I just think that's what vulnerability is. When you risk, when you take the risk to be vulnerable, to be honest about where you are or how you feel, you open yourself up to rejection. And so we want to self-protect. We want to either not show up as we are. And so we pretend or we perfect or we perform in order to not be rejected. And so I think that in these seasons, when we start to feel that pull of like, I think I need to self-protect because I don't know what's going on. I don't know who I am. We start feeling that fear. I think it goes back to what you were saying a minute ago, that taking that vulnerability and speaking it out, that really is such the first step. It is vulnerability meets vulnerability. And it's saying, I don't know who I am. I don't know what's going on, or I feel really not like myself. And opening that up to someone to step into with you goes a really long way when we're in that moment and we want to self-protect.
Mm. All of that is so good. I love that you're naming on this podcast. We have a lot of people in different life stages. So if you're someone listening and you're just about to graduate college,
yeah,
or you're walking into your first like big girl job, or you're about to have a baby, or you're maybe on your multiple children, or you're walking into a new career. Like, I just think you've named so many good things right there. That again, like, we all feel sometimes alone and feeling like, gosh, I actually worked really hard for this degree and now I actually don't like what I'm doing. Like, shoot,
it's like did
I
just mess up? Expectation of it sometimes, like, yes, what the reality doesn't live up, yeah, to like what you expect that
and
to
I
feel
love
like.
That you're just, yeah, like naming these things of like, no, it's okay if you're thinking that, because like we've all been there.
Yeah.
And then how, yeah, do we move forward? I think for me, even, yeah, when you talk about this concept of like being scared to show up as the current version, I think for me, how God has worked in my life in that is that I have really had to learn how to humbly come before God and say, like, you have made me, you have brought me through these seasons for reasons. And it's easy for me to dream about or only really like look forward to a different season or a different version of myself or romanticize who I used to be or what life used to look like. And it really is, I think, God in his like kindness and goodness really saying, hey, Christian, like, actually stop. Like, I've put you in this season right now for a reason. I took you from the other season, brought you into this one. It may be better, it may be worse. I may be like bringing you to a better or worse season in the future. But time and time again, he humbles me to say, no, but like, this is where I have you now. And this is what I am calling, mm-hmm, you to right now. And it takes a lot of humility and it's really hard and it's not pretty and it's not fun sometimes. But I can so easily say, no, I want to romanticize, mm-hmm, what things used to look like or who I used, yeah, to be, or in 5 years, what it will be. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, just so hard to sit in the current.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Going There girls. We hope you're loving today's episode. We just have a quick favor. If you don't mind leaving us a 5-star rating and review, whether you listen on Apple or Spotify, you can just click that little 5 stars. Or if you're on Apple, leave a little review. And that is seriously such an easy way to help other people find Going There. And we so appreciate it. Now let's get back to our conversation.
I mean, for sure, what I keep hearing, the word that comes to mind as you were talking, is just acceptance. And that is not easy. And I can say that word and it sounds easy, but it is not easy to accept where you are. It is very hard for me to accept where I am. I live in the future. I am like, let's go. Like, what's going to happen next? And what can I be driving towards? And then I can look back at the past. If I really let myself think, I don't try to do this much, but when I let myself think, I can be filled with regret. Like, oh, if only I had like done this or taken this path or went this direction. And then I just get so frustrated and think, where would I be now? And what would my future look like? Mm. And so keep coming back down to acceptance and going, yes, like you can be sad about what didn't happen or what did happen, but you can still be okay with where you are. And that's so much of when I'm in those seasons, I really have to focus on gratitude. Mm. And I have to be mindful to do that. That's where acceptance comes from for me, is to sit down and go, what made you smile today? What was good today? Mm-hmm. And even just those small, ordinary things. I did it this morning. We have a metal roof on our house. And it's like the rain on the roof last night. And the coffee in my hand, right? Like, it's just these little things, yeah, that you can pay attention and go, oh, that really made me smile. That, mm-hmm, is a really good thing. Because those big things, launching a book or all these things, are so few and far between, mm-hmm, that we have to focus on those little things, especially when we are knee deep in a season where we're like, now what? And I'm in this in between where I'm not where I was and I'm, mm-hmm, not where I'm going. I'm just in this middle space. I think that's when we have to really dial up our practice of acceptance.
Yeah. And as you guys were both talking, like you're saying acceptance, like as you were speaking, I kept thinking too of like what does bring this ultimate, like, quote unquote, happiness, or like this true deep soul joy that we can have in life in any season, regardless of like whether it's just these little things that are like slightly off, or if we're walking through like very hard seasons of tons of suffering. And I think about contentment. And as you're talking about, it's like, well, you can't get to a place of contentment until you've learned to accept where you are currently. And then that gratitude piece, I again think is so important. It's like we can kind of get wrapped up into thinking like, well, nothing is right. And it's like, sometimes I think we can hear it easily in other people where you're like, you're crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, look at your life. Like, look at all the beauty around you. But you're right. We have to become people that practice gratitude in that way. And it can even sound very, in our culture, I think that's part of what culture would say is like a good, I don't know, way to practice spirituality. But it is like such a biblical concept of just like thinking about all that we have so that we can move to a place of contentment. And I think that that's like how you can look at any season and say, okay, I didn't think I was going to be here, but now I'm actually starting to love where I'm at because I'm content. And I think God works in that space. Like he asks us to sit in that space, but it takes all of those things you were saying, like, well, first we have to like name it, accept it. Like it's a whole process. Yeah. It's good.
I'll give a practical example of when I was, I guess it was like late 30s, and I had launched my podcast in 2015. And by that point, it had been going for several years. And when I was launching it and had the idea for it, I thought, okay, this is where I'm going. This is the future of where I'm going. And at some point, I got to this point and I went, oh, this is not going to get me where I thought I was going to go. And it took this point of sort of acceptance of where I was, that like, here's where I actually am. Not looking at the past, not looking at the future. This is where I am with this piece of work. And I really had a moment of accepting that this is what it is. It's not going to be this thing. Mm-hmm. And there was a level of peace that came with it, but there was also grief. It was grieving that, oh, like this didn't give me what I thought it was going to give me. I'm not going to get to this point. That path that I was going down is not going to work out, and having to wrestle with that. But I can still remember the house we lived in at the time and the chair I was sitting in and the process where I was, you know, just journaling and processing through and getting to that acceptance point. It's like I could physically feel that acceptance coming on. And like I said, it brought grief, but it also brought peace in that moment.
That's cool.
That's so good, because I think, again, what you're saying is just like so relatable. There's an aspect when you understand like my reality is not what I expected. You accepting that, it is okay to grieve that. It is okay.
Yeah.
We have to grieve that.
Yeah, it is okay to like have grief over that. So talk to us, because in your book, you talk through then like, how do we not compare? Because there is an aspect of this grief. How do we not bring comparison into our grief? Because we all know that will stunt us. But what does that actually look like?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you have to hold space for your own grief, and that you can be sad about that thing, even if you're like, gosh, on this level, I mean, she has a whole lot more things to be sad about. It's easy to go shame yourself for even feeling grief about it. And I think that I tend to operate like that. I tend to go, why am I sad about this? Because look, like, I have all this stuff. My life is good. I have work. I have a family. I have friends. I have all these things. Why am I sad? And then you shame yourself and you feel bad about that. And it really wasn't until I started therapy and I was telling her my story, and she was like, you really have a lot of grief. And I was like, no, I don't have any grief. I'm fine. Like, it's all good. Like, I accept it. I'm like, And, but it was going, you just have to hold space for your own grief. Don't let someone else's grief negate your grief. We all have reasons to be sad, and that's okay. And comparison in any front, you never win with comparison, and you'll always feel either less about yourself or better than someone else. And that's neither one is a great place to be. And so even in grief, just holding space for how you feel is a really important place to be.
Yeah. We were at IF Gathering this year, and one of the little speakers was kind of talking about these questions that are asked within this group of women in a cohort that are this vulnerability group, basically accountability group. And one of the questions was like, what are you grieving right now? And I think it's so interesting because it's just been in the past couple of years that I've really understood that, oh, grief isn't just for the miscarriages I've walked through or the losing a loved one. Like, you can grieve, oh, I'm grieving like the season that my kids were in a year ago where life felt a little bit easier at their ages. Long story short, we've been asking each other in our personal lives that question more often. And even in my small group within our church this past week, we asked that question. And for a couple of girls, I watched them kind of like, they're like, well, I need to go last because I don't really know. And then by the time we got to them, they're like, I never thought of grief in this way. But one girl just had a baby like 3 weeks ago. And she's like, it's like this happy time. Obviously, having a 3-week-old mm-hmm. is also a very hard time. But she was just like, I think I'm just grieving like even from a few weeks ago when life was just so simple with my one other daughter and all these little things. And it was like you saw these women's eyes lighting up of like, wait, I do need to kind of grieve these things that maybe in the world would seem like small little things, but it helps you really accept, like we're talking about where you are now, to be able to acknowledge there is some sadness in the way that I'm feeling about the reality. So I really
well,
like
that. Well, you have to feel sad in order to feel happy. Yeah. You know yes. what I mean? You won't know what happy feels like if you've never felt sad.
Yeah.
And I think that we have been, at least I know for myself and the generation that I was raised in, especially in the church, emotions were looked down upon. You could only feel those like nice emotions
right.
or a righteous anger. But if you felt sad or hurt or angry, like it was kind of like, oh, let's move on, yeah. move on. Join mm-hmm. the Lord, Jordan. And you're like, but I am sad.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we have to allow ourselves to feel what we feel. Mm-hmm. And those are just all feelings. No feeling is bad. There aren't bad feelings. Yeah. We have to allow ourselves to feel those things because it is just a normal part of being human.
Yeah.
And there's a quote, I can't think of the author in this moment, but it's at the end of one of my favorite movies, is Jojo Rabbit. And it says, no feeling is final. You have to feel sad and you mm-hmm. have to feel happiness and joy. You have to have one to have the other, but no feeling is final. And that is so true. So while you mm-hmm. feel grief as a mom of a new baby and you're going, I grieve mm-hmm. the loss of when it was just the one child. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that's bad. It doesn't mean that
right.
you don't love the new life that you have. It's just a feeling. And it's important to acknowledge those feelings so that you can process them and move yep. through them.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. I loved what you said about comparison of like, no really good thing comes from comparison. Mm. We have a friend who always like says, she's like, I was just sending all over the place. And when I think about comparison for me, mm-hmm. I think about that. Like when I am playing the comparison game, when I'm comparing my circumstances or my grief or my experience of something compared to someone else, good or bad,
yeah.
I'm sending all over the place. I am either being really prideful and thinking way better of myself and less of someone else. I'm being like rude and mm-hmm. hurtful or unloving, or I'm doing the opposite. And I'm actually thinking of myself like greater than God. And I am saying like, no, I've got this under control. Yeah. I can do this without you. And so no good thing ever comes from comparison. And so I think it's even good to think about that in the aspect of grief, just as we walk yeah. through missed expectations of that. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's just well, yeah, a reality we all feel. Mm-hmm.
Comparison really kills connection mm-hmm. is what it does. And one of the things that I read a lot of books on happiness when I was in that year of getting ready to write and thinking about what to write. And so much of what I learned about happiness is that it comes down to connection because mm-hmm. we are social humans created and wired to connect. And so when you are comparing, you're really killing that connection. You're either killing the connection within yourself, because when I know when I compare, I just sometimes I feel awful about myself. So I walk mm-hmm. away feeling less than, or I'm killing the connection with you. If I'm looking at you and going, gosh, look at their podcast. They have this whole thing and I don't mm-hmm. like, and then I'm like, okay, that's killing the connection right. between us. And really that's what matters at the end of the day is the connection that we feel with ourselves, the connection that we feel with others. And if you are a God, a person, like connection with God. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's at the end of the day, what it is about and why comparison is really harmful.
Mm, yeah. That's good. Yes. It's so, so good, Sarah. I mean, I can't wait to dive more into your book and I want to like read all these concepts because mm-hmm. you obviously have done a lot of digging to figure out what does this really look like and how can we actually move forward and not just, I know you kind of coined the phrase in your book too, like not just survive mm-hmm. in that, but actually thrive as we process these things. But why don't you just leave us there or with something today? If someone is finding themselves in a place of just really having a hard time grieving, just the reality of exactly what you said, like everyone is happier than I, how would you encourage that person today? What would you leave them with?
I think I would go back to sort of what we've said kind of all along in this conversation is you need to talk to somebody. like get out of your head. I feel like that's been the biggest lesson for me is I can do a lot of mental gymnastics in my head around these topics. And the moment I get it out of my head, it starts healing. It starts moving through. It starts moving forward. Whether that looks like just journaling, that's a huge thing. Just stream of consciousness. I'm going to write all these things down, or calling a trusted friend that you go, I know I can be safe with this friend and I can actually say what I'm thinking. Maybe it takes seeing a counselor and going, I need someone that's an outside perspective to speak into this. I think that's really where it starts, is going, I've got to get out of my head and start speaking it out loud, because there's something, I don't know, it's diffusing when you speak those words out loud, those vulnerabilities, when you're honest and you're going, this is what I'm struggling with. This is how I feel. I think when we can verbally speak it out, it really starts to diffuse the power that it holds in our minds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you left us with so much good wisdom today. I'm seriously taking all this in as just, yeah, I think in every season, like you said, there's so many things that could be that changing season, but I'm about to turn 30. Christian just had her third baby. We're just like in these huge transitional moments. And it's kind of like those moments in life where you look back and you're like, what have I done so far? Does any of it matter? Where am I going? Who am I going to be? And it's just like coming back to those places are so beneficial and I think wise for us to remember, because we don't have to be lost in all the feelings. So thank you so much for speaking to us and our audience today. I don't know. I just feel like you're so warm and have been like really fun to hear from.
Oh, thank you. I love this too.
Yeah. Sarah, why don't you leave everyone with where can we find your book at and just learn more about you, follow you, all the things.
Absolutely. Well, you can buy Is Everyone Happier Than Me anywhere you want to buy your books from. You can find them there. My website is sarahbragg.com. That's S-A-R-A-H-B-R-A-G-G. I do a monthly survival kit newsletter where I write about all the things that I was loving or that helped me survive that month, if you want to sign up for that. And then Sarah W. Bragg on Instagram.
Love that.
Well, we'll make sure to tag all of that in our show notes too, so people can easily find you. But thanks again for giving us your time today, and thanks for all the wisdom you shared.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for going there with us.
If you loved what you heard, don't forget to follow along with us at Going There, the podcast.
And it also means so much to us if you subscribe to our podcast and shared it with a friend.
Talk to you soon.